Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast. This is going to be podcast 386, Outside and In Stereo. And I love the backdrop of being in the backyard on the flat right by the screen door at the back end of the broadcast bunker because there's a lot going on, especially in the day. So we're going to hear planes and we're going to hear birds and we're going to hear the guys building the house next door and God knows what else. And that's always fun. And I'm announcing News Cleanse 2015 in this podcast. So this is going to be the last news-oriented podcast until the end of the News Cleanse. And it should be the last podcast in June of 2015. I'm taking a short hiatus, and I'll talk about that in this podcast. You know, I talk a lot about tech and manufacturing in these podcasts, and when I do, I think of Bocklund R&D, and I hope you do too. Bocklund isn't just a machine shop or manufacturer. They're toolmakers and innovators and trainers. And if your business is looking for a manufacturer, you want to know more about what Bocklund can do. And I was talking with John Bocklund yesterday. We were having some dumplings and sesame chicken together, and we talked about how great a resource Bocklund.com is for people who want to learn more about the company. And that's been the whole intention of the website Bocklund.com, Bocklund.com. So the first thing you want to do if you want to learn more about Bocklund is go to that website and find out what they do. It's not your average manufacturing company website. At Bocklund.com, you're going to find out about the latest developments at the company, including the webinar series that John's doing that starts July 15th. And the latest development at the company called micro machining. John said we've just bought a couple of micro machining systems, machines basically, and why. And I was asking why. And he said, because most small parts have to be assembled and it ends up being complicated and costly. And with new technologies, with these micro machining machines, manufacturers like Bocklund can work with a single piece of material. And the result is more accuracy, strength, and a more durable part. Micro molding starts at 0.003 cubic inches and below, and it's done in a clean room environment, which is perfect for building medical devices and electronics. So now you know the latest innovative developments at Bocklund R&D. Don't forget wicked fast turnaround times, innovative solutions, real client service, which I've talked about, and real resources about Bocklund and manufacturing at Bocklund.com. If you want to know more, you go to the website, or you can contact John Bocklund or Vice President Tara Bocklund at Bocklund.com and ask what they can do for you. Find out what energy, wisdom, knowledge, and imaginations of the people that worked there four generations worth can do for your company today at Bocklund.com, Bocklund.com. And thanks, John, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. Well, I love podcasting from the flat just outside the broadcast bunker. And I love dragging the studio mics outside because they're very sensitive and they pick up almost every sound. And I'm out here in a rare daytime podcast and they're picking up almost everything. So just be aware, this is one of those podcasts for headphones, and it's a podcast that if you don't like ambient sound, it's probably going to bother you. It bothers me sometimes when I do these podcasts and I have to work around the noise, but it's also great because it's a slice of life. You know, you can hear the construction up on the highway. You can hear the guys building the house across the way. You can hear thunder in the distance, and you can hear the trains and the planes and everything else. And it's kind of fun. So that's what I'm doing today. I realized last night that I've been podcasting almost every day now for 2 years plus with a wide breadth of content and topics. And in this process, I realized this week that I haven't taken any time off in the last 2 years. Whenever I traveled, I did podcasts from the road to the extent that, you know, I've purchased the mobile podcast command center so that when I do go on the road, I can do podcasts. And I got down towards the end of June and I realized that I did too many podcasts on the road. So in terms of my production schedule, a rare thing has happened. And that is that I have 4 or 5 days where I really don't have to do a podcast. So this is going to be the last podcast for June of 2015. And I'll take a little bit break and a little bit of a hiatus. And it's also a time for a break from the news. And I've done a news cleanse last year in the fall, I think it was, and I'm going to do another one now at approximately the same time. And I usually ask people to do it with me. because I think it's very therapeutic. Why now? Why do the news cleanse now? Well, first of all, I have the opportunity to take a hiatus, so I'm going to do it. And I can feel, I mean, I'm mentally brittle and tired, so it's a good time to do this. But also, there's some things that I want to say. The more I do this, the more I do podcasts, the more I travel, the more yoga I do, the more that I look for different and innovative ways to podcast and more and different innovative ways to do podcasts and more topics to do podcasts about and different stories to tell, the more that I realize that my process depends on news media, it depends on the news, and the more I realize that the established news media, and that includes all of it, whether it's broadcast, whether it's cable television news, newsletters via email that we all get, news websites, memes, Facebook, you know, Twitter, whatever, this is essentially pouring poison into our hearts and minds. You have people that are all, you know, talking about nutritious food, and yet we continue to just let this sludge come into our heads in our living rooms every day. And this is especially true for people who live and die by the 24-hour, 7-day-a-week news cycle all of the reality shows and all the things going on and the struggles that they feel. Now, I am not going to tell you that I think people are incited or driven to do terrible things like commit mass murder by things like this, you know, any more than people are driven or incited to do bad things by video games or movies or anything. So I'm not going to tell you that. But I am talking about the rank and file of people that I know on the right wing of American politics. And I've learned that on the right, people have come to depend on talk radio and Fox News and the networks and this constant flow of information to do their work for them. They think that they're actually researching a topic by watching this stuff and listening to this stuff. And the end result is that people seem to think that opinions shouted loudly enough is the same as political action. So they get together in these groups and they shout these political opinions and they pound on the tables and they commiserate. And it's been my experience that the result is over the course of the 10 or 11 or 15, 20 years that we are devolving down to a population of people who really have a very limited understanding of tactical politics. And a very limited understanding of the enormity of the task at hand if you're on the right, and a very limited and childlike understanding of how things actually work and the depth of these issues. I know it is harsh to say this, but it is also true. The reason for this is that these people have been informed over the years by all of this yelling and screaming and anger and frustration, which is really designed to increase ratings. It's not designed to inform. And what happens is we have become informed by nothing more than opinions from people that we think have their heart in the right place. That's it. So my reason for the news cleanse is, first of all, the fact is that hypervigilance with the news media has always been dangerous because there's always an outrage. There's always something somebody said. There's always something to be upset about. And then nothing is going to happen to fix it. So you're just going to get more and more upset because few people couple outrage with any action. And if they do, everybody seems to want to start some sort of individual action. They think if they put something on Facebook or tweet something out or they do a blog or something that it will start a movement or they start their own meeting. And there are as many different so-called conservative groups with their own media and meeting dates and everything else as there are grains of sand. And yet there is no coordination of these groups. Yet everybody's complaining. And nobody actually stands up and volunteers to do something except for the people who always do the work. And you guys know who you are. So that's what I want to do is just get away from that for a while. And I advise other people to do it because, you know, all of this shouting and screaming and intensity really just doesn't help with getting things done. And I'll give you a couple of examples. First of all, in Minnesota, we have an open political system. People can go to their caucuses and they can become delegates. If you do go to caucuses, you will find that in most precincts, there aren't that many people there. Some precincts are pretty heavily populated. But you can also go to the BPOU meetings, and you can become elected officers of your local basic political unit based on state Senate districts. There's about 100 or more of these BPOUs in the state of Minnesota. And they constitute a tremendous opportunity for people to become involved and to make a difference. And yet, Republican Congressman Eric Paulson recently said, the biggest problem on the Republican side is a lack of engagement. And what he means is he finds that there's no one at the BPOU meetings. There's no one to put signs up. There's no one to door knock. They're not getting any help from people, and they're not engaged. And what they end up with are the usual burned out people who have stepped up again and again and again. And these are the people the congressmen talk to and meet at the receptions and see, as well as the lobbyists and the big donors, right? So what's happening is people are saturated with news coverage and opinion, usually delivered with name-calling and lurid headlines, and usually accompanied by only half the story, with no effort to explain the complexities or the burning building or the riot or pictures, which are emotional and really upset people most of the time. If you know, people are visually stimulated, and pictures and burning buildings and riots and things like that, and shouting gets people very upset. Good examples are people's opinions based on this kind of media, whether it's economics or foreign policy. People will fixate on foreign aid and how we should stop it, but most of them don't realize that foreign aid is a tiny portion of the U.S. budget, or they think we should withdraw from the rest of the world. And this is a direct quote, bring all the business back to our shores, never realizing that the problem with all this is, first of all, any free market person is a free trader, and that the country has always been based in some way, shape, or form on foreign trade, whether exports or imports. And that if you like your standard of living today, everything that we see today, the standard of living that we have today depends on foreign trade both ways. And if we don't trade with the rest of the world, if we try to bring all the business back, if we become protectionist, everything that you see today, you can kiss goodbye. As I said, this is a country based on foreign trade from the get-go. Another direct quote is, quote, they're shipping all of our jobs to China. I've talked about this a couple times, and when people say this, they just don't realize most of the job loss in manufacturing in this country is due to IT over the last 50 years, and in particular the last 20 years. And in China, millions of jobs have been lost to IT, just as millions of jobs in agriculture were lost to manufacturing over the course of the Industrial Revolution. And yet, when you say this stuff, these people blink and they just repeat what Glenn Beck said, or they repeat what some talk show host said. They don't think about it. And this all adds up to, over the last 10 or 15 or 20 years, a breathtaking ignorance, which is even more pronounced by the tendency of people on the right to constantly demean people on the left as stupid or crazy, and that also happens from people on the left. I spoke at a Tea Party group this week. Most of the time when you go to these meetings, speakers come to these meetings and they blow sunshine at the skirts of the people there. They come up with a rosy scenario. They tell those people what they want to hear. Politicians troop through these meetings and pay homage to the dwindling number of people at them. And then they go back to their legislatures and they do whatever they want. And I had to deliver the message that said, basically, because of ignorance and confusion and lack of understanding of tactical politics and what exactly political power is, you have no political power. So these people come and they speak, whether they work for the national party or the state party or their representatives or state representatives or whatever, they go back and they do whatever they're going to do, because the people they're talking to are the people they see all the time, the lobbyists or the big money donors. This is a week in which the last bastion of defense against the Affordable Care Act failed. A lot of people upset about that on the right, and they failed. It failed in the courts that supposedly the right thought they had because of Chief Justice John Roberts. The reality is that without any real political power, the so-called conservative movement in this country is unable to affect influence on Republican leadership in the House and Senate, which, by the way, has drifted to the middle in lieu of any counterweight. And they have come to depend on the courts as a last-ditch defense. But the fact is, the Supreme Court, after picking a president in 2000, which I've never thought they should have stayed out of it, has been loath to overturn anything Congress passed. If you'll recall back to 2000 and the whole issue with George W. Bush and Al Gore, There was a lot of discussion about the Supreme Court overstepping its boundaries and reaching down into Florida to pick a president because the thought was, we don't want this to go on too long and we don't want this to go to Congress. And I always felt that they did not allow the process to work. But there was a lot of discussion about the Supreme Court damaging itself through that overreach. So the Supreme Court, contrary to popular belief, has become very sensitive to public opinion. And without a tangible counterweight on the right, you're left with the very conservative justices voting against this and the rest of them, the liberals voting for it, and the Chief Justice and others that are in the middle, really sensitive to public opinion and not wanting to be the ogre that takes the health insurance away from millions of people and creates chaos in the health system, which is really the purveyance of Congress. So there's no tangible counterweight on the right, and now you're seeing that influence even in the courts. So the reality is there is no principle in politics, and every time I go out and speak, I hear about this thing where people will say, why don't these guys have any principle? Why don't they adhere to principles? When you're a politician, you don't have any principles. There is only power or the absence of it, and on the right, there is no power because there's no tactical political power. Expecting politicians to act on principle is foolhardy and childish, and I'm weary continually repeating that over and over again, because this is what the so-called conservative movement in this country thinks, that if they yell loud enough about principle, that if they get enough Glenn Becks and Koch brothers to do the research for them and the organizing work for them, somehow Congress and the courts will listen, or miraculously somehow the political structure of Congress and of the Republican Party will change. Somehow out of all this, they will elect a president who is principled and operates from a principled base. Meanwhile, you are hearing nothing but nonsense at these meetings about special forces exercises in Texas, secession, whether the president is a Muslim, chemtrails, jobs being shipped to China, you know, Louis Farrakhan, whom nobody listens to anyway, Somalis, on and on and on. And we also await with bated breath the next national crisis to somehow help the right-wing cause, which is pathetic. You know, we're hoping that some horrible thing happens so that somehow people will wake up and realize that the scales will fall from their eyes and somehow they will embrace the constitutional, so-called libertarian. But I'm not really talking about libertarians here, the constitutional religious right in this country. This is the state of the so-called conservative in America today. Meanwhile, as I travel around the country, I have to tell you, I don't see people really caring about this. I don't see people experiencing the country caving in or falling apart. Yes, there are bad places. There's poverty. But for the most part, I see people doing their jobs, taking their kids to hockey or soccer or Little League, living their lives. I see people of all different cultures living together, married, not married, raising children together, doing all sorts of things together. And they are taking care of their parents. They're taking care of their children. They are living and dying, and they are not living and dying based on what the Tea Party says or the Republicans or the Democrats or what this idiot on television said last night. In many ways, I think they've tuned it out. Now, everybody knows my heart's in the right place. I think that developments in technology that will lead to a situation in the next 10 or 20 years or sooner that will demand a much less intrusive, scaled-back government, state and local, on the Jeffersonian model. I think there's going to be a lot of chaos because there are going to be people who are disenfranchised because they will be winners and losers in that transaction. And a lot of the losers, by the way, are going to be on the political right. They don't realize that. A lot of the winners will be on the political left and vice versa. It's going to be a top, up-down, upside-down, topsy-turvy world. And the fact is that the new world may not look anything like people of the old world would have expected on both sides of the political spectrum. And I have to tell you, I am beginning to feel like we are seeing the changing of the guard. We are seeing more and more millennials step up and take jobs and become part of the adult world. And they don't see things the way the people that I'm talking to out there in the world see things. It doesn't mean that their ideas are valid, but there is a big shift in political viewpoints, and it is not with the Tea Party, and it is not with what is left of what people used to call the conservative movement in this country. What I am seeing on political circles on the right is angry, frustrated people who can be rude, who don't like anything. They don't like moderates. They don't like libertarians. They don't like the religious right. They don't like this. They don't like that. But at the same time, they don't have a real root or grounding. And the best that they can come up with is to point to the Constitution, and they read it religiously and do all this stuff religiously at every one of these meetings, or not. And they come up with opposition to the banking system and the Federal Reserve and the people who aren't listening to the Constitution. The reality is, and the truth is, that in lieu of any real grounding purpose, this so-called conservative movement, which really goes back to the 1960s, starting with Murray Rothbard and Barry Goldwater and really the libertarians, eventually leading to Reagan, is actually fading. And I think it's fading fast, because with no grounding purpose, there is also no mechanism or passion for action and no way to introduce new people to the process. And really, I don't see any understanding of what tactical action to take and how that's done. You know, I go out and I talk a lot about precinct organization and BPOUs, and they don't know what I'm talking about. They just don't understand it. So what's left in this are moderate Republicans who control much of the Republican Party apparatus. And by the way, this is the same group of Republicans, the Rockefeller Republicans or the Nixon Republicans, who controlled the Republican Party for years and years and years. And you also see the same thing in the Democratic Party with the so-called moderate, you know, Hillary Clinton Democrat, which means varying degrees of statism and varying degrees of support for it, whether it is programs for the poor or invasions of foreign countries to free them and help them become Democrats, you know, democratic governments. It doesn't matter. It's all statism. The idea that the state, a system where the state has substantial centralized control over social and economic affairs, the state is preeminent. And what we're trying to do is reverse the tide of that kind of thinking, which has been in action in this country for 60 or 70 years since Roosevelt. And the fact is that given the year, Republicans can muster 42 to 43% of the vote and Democrats close to the same. When you get into congressional battles with gerrymandering of districts, it's a little bit different kind of a situation. So the 1% battle is fought through either getting the loyal vote out or finding new voters to add to the percentages. And it's fought out through the media with one lurid story after another, one outrage to the next, and everybody plays their part. And if they don't play their part, they don't have a part. The anchors, the talk show hosts, the talking heads, the pundits, the analysts, the insiders, the outsiders, the officials, the legislators, the rating systems, the politicians, and the assorted clown show of local idiots who do stupid things once a month. That's the reality. And in the America on television, the streets are burning. People are massacring each other. People hate each other. No one has a moral center, including and especially the religious leaders. You're only safe if you're a protected class. The world is on fire. It's heating up and being destroyed. The world hates the United States, or we're either a burgeoning dangerous empire or a horribly corrupt, dirty country full of whores and charlatans that is falling apart, that hates black people, that hates Asian people, that hates Latino people, that white people are horrible people, and vice versa. And then I go out and I travel and I talk to people and I don't see that. I don't see that America. And that's why I think we should turn it off. And I think we should turn it off a lot. I've met a lot of good people and they all have a story. And they are all not angels, and they are not all bad people. And if you talk to the old people, they will tell you that life was pretty much the same 100 years ago or 60 years ago. These people live in big and small towns, and most of them are pretty nice, helpful people, despite whatever challenge they're dealing with in their internal life, whether they work at the Office Max or the local diner or the company or whatever they do. By the way, their internal life is none of your business, in spite of what people think about social media and everything being public. So if you want things to change, then what's got to happen is we have to find some kind of workable plan and idea to coalesce around for how things are going to change. It doesn't mean that things are going to fall apart if they don't change. It just means that we're going to continue to roll down this road, and we'll come out at whatever end we come out. To do this, you have to be able to muster people out to get the work done and build a movement. And movements take years to build. You know, the people that were propelled into the street in 2010 on the right really just haven't matured, and they haven't matured to the point where they're able to build a movement. They are getting people like the Koch brothers are building the movement. And more often than not, the people that go out and try to sell their books will tell them that they need to have a slate of candidates, that it's all going to come top down. This is how we have to do things. But that's not how American politics works. The fact is that organizations that don't perform some service or action fail and fade. And this is happening with the so-called conservative movement, which is a shadow of its former self. And I don't think that you're going to continue to see much from the conservative movement unless somehow people figure out that they've got to change things. You know, that doesn't preclude a Republican president from being elected. It just may not be the kind of Republican president that people out there expect. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to turn all this off, and I'm going to take a few days off, because this is the way that I reboot and restore my sense and maintain the positive energy. I'm just going to do nothing but as much yoga as possible and enjoy this beautiful summer week, this first summer week of June, and then I will be back July 1st with a podcast. So that's kind of where I'm at, and I hope that I can tell when I come back, I hope I can tell some different stories, and I'm going to try not to delve so deep into the news of the day and try to talk about some issues that that I can get into more deeply. And I go through this. This is a love-hate relationship. I go back and forth all the time, and it's just a good time for me to just take a quick break. So that's what I'm going to do. So if you've been wondering where the podcasts are, now you know. Thanks for listening to Podcast 386, sponsored by Bockland R&D. Don't forget the micro-machining capability they have. It's great for medical devices. If you have a medical device, you know, a company that's manufacturing very small devices, it's great for that. And it's also great for electronics. And don't forget that Bockland is an innovator, and they can help you. If you want to know more about it, get in contact with John Bockland or Tara Bockland, who is now the vice president over at Bockland R&D, and check out the website Bockland R&D and sign up for the webinar, which will tell you a lot about what they're doing and how they're doing it. I want to thank the digital sponsor of the Bob Davis podcast, Ken Madden, with Mad K Studios. They do original automotive artwork. They're going to be at a lot of these antique auto shows this summer, of which there are many in Minnesota and Wisconsin. And I'll tell you more about that as Ken lets me know. So thanks, Ken, for sponsoring the digital side of the Bob Davis podcast. Thank you for listening on Stitcher.com, on the granddaddy, of course, iTunes. And tune in. I also have two players on the page, Blog Talk Radio and Tune In. I'm not sure if they're slowing the page down. I don't think so, but we're working on that and hopefully just doing everything we can do to continue to make the BobDavisPodcast.com as fast as and as quick and as high quality as possible. So I just want to say I may eventually remove those players. We'll see, but we'll have to check. My friend Charlie, the dog next door, is actually standing here as I speak. Hey, Charlie. What are you doing over there? What are you doing? Are you eating bugs? Getting some protein? And thanks for listening to the podcast right on the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com. People can do that. And thanks for, you know, all the people I've run into in my travels. If you ran into me out there on the road or at one of the meetings I spoke at, great to talk to you, and thanks for listening to the Bob Davis podcasts. Bye-bye.